Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Stephanie.
I am Tom, and today we're going to continue talking about our featured novel, American Pastoral, The American Dream Reconsidered. Now, remember, we talked about this before, and we talked about the plot, and, of course, it involves the main character, Seymour, and his nickname, of course, is the Swede, and he had everything going for him, and he was from a rich family. He married a beauty queen, but later he got divorced and married somebody else. But his friend Nathan found out some of his skeletons in the closet, so to speak, and he found out that Seymour actually had a radical daughter who bombed a post office because she was protesting against the Vietnam War, and so I guess his perfect life was not so perfect after all.
Yeah, and his friend Nathan Zuckerman decided to write a novel kind of about Seymour's life. And in it, he has a daughter that has a strained relationship with her dad. And this daughter, of course, does bomb a post office as well. So it's kind of a novel within a novel, you could say. And at the end of the novel that Nathan wrote, he has Seymour kind of deciding whether to rescue his daughter, Mary, or run off with her therapist, Sheila, who he's been having an affair with.
Ooh.
And that's kind of the plot of the book, American Pastoral. Pastoral is an interesting word. You don't often see it. It's a word that means country life, but it also means country life in the most perfect way. If you could imagine the best country life possible, that would be pastoral. So it's kind of this American dream reconsidered. A lot of people think if you move to America from a foreign country, you have a better chance of becoming a success. There are no boundaries in America. You don't have to be, you know, born into high society. You could be born poor, but if you work hard, you can become wealthy. That's the American dream. But Philip Roth is saying, well, yeah, it could happen for some people, but it doesn't always happen that way.
No, it doesn't, but we're going to talk about some of the themes and ideas of American Pastoral in today's lesson. So, hey, let's get to it.
Cool.
Let's read the entire contents, and we'll be right back to discuss it.
One of American Pastoral's key themes is contained in the title. The word pastoral refers to literature that portrays rural life in a romantic way. Pastorals are often used to compare the peacefulness of country scenery to the chaos of urban life. In the novel, this contrast exists between the city of Newark, where Seymour grew up, and Rimrock, the quieter environment where he raised his daughter. On another level, Seymour's life is also a pastoral. On the outside, he has everything a person could desire. Yet on the inside, his life is filled with turmoil and regret. The idea of an American pastoral also refers to the American dream. This is the idea that if you work hard in America, you can achieve a happy life with a nice house, a loving family, and lots of material things. As the son of immigrants, Seymour believes in this idea. He even manages to make it a reality for a while. In contrast, Mary has no faith in the American dream. She is critical of the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War and believes that the only way that people can make the American dream come true is by taking advantage of the poor and helpless. Another interesting aspect of the novel is its structure and conclusion. The events don't happen in chronological order. The book begins in the 1990s and ends in 1973. This was a significant year, as it was the year the U.S. began withdrawing its troops from Vietnam. By structuring the book this way, Roth reminds his readers that most of the story is occurring in Zuckerman's imagination. The book's abrupt ending is violent and filled with pain and uncertainty. It suggests that our lives will never be perfect, and that we all will encounter problems that can never be resolved.
All right, everybody, let's talk about our featured novel, American Pastoral, The American Dream Reconsidered. Now, we, of course, have been talking about this novel and its author for the past couple of programs, and we've mentioned this word pastoral many times. Well, if you've had difficulty understanding it, hey, it's your lucky day because we're actually going to tell you what this is all about. Let's talk about the actual title here. One of American Pastoral's key themes is contained in the title. There you go. One of the main ideas of this novel is right there in the title, American Pastoral. Pastoral. Of course, I can see the word pastor in there, who's like the leader of a church. That might be a related word. Or it also looks like the word pasture, P-A-S-T-U-R-E, which for me, having grown up in a rural area, a pasture, of course, is where animals can graze and eat grass and stuff like that. So pastoral must have something to do with the country.
Mm-hmm. And so it says here the word pastoral refers to literature that portrays rural life, but in a romantic way. Some people would think that living in the country or the rural area would be boring and not great. I prefer city life, I'll be honest. But Tom grew up in more of a rural area. Isn't that true?
More or less. My hometown only has 7,000 people
in the
middle of nowhere. So that's growing up in a rural community. But, you make do with what you've got there. And, you might be surprised, but you can actually find lots of things to do in a
small town. Yeah.
If you use your imagination. And, again, as you said, pastoral refers to life or rural life in a romantic way. Refer to means that's what it is talking about.
And portray means to depict someone or something in some sort of work of art or literature. Actors will portray characters in films, and authors will portray a character as they write their novel or work of fiction.
And I got to say this, but ever since we started talking about this, the word pastoral reminds me of Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, the Pastoral Symphony, which is all about Beethoven's feelings about the country and stuff like that. So, hey, go on to YouTube and find it and play it, and you'll probably maybe get into a country feeling, and you might want to get a ticket down to Yunlin or Zhanghua or someplace like that. But in any case, pastorals are often used to compare the peacefulness of country scenery to the chaos of urban life. So they're kind of comparing these things. If you think about the country and the scenery there with the streams and the little woods and things like that, sometimes mountains and things like that, it has a lot of peacefulness, which is a noun. That's the state of being peaceful. But the opposite, of course, is the chaos of urban life. And if you live here in lovely Taipei, you'll know what this is talking about. Unless you've lived here all your life, it's nothing unusual. But for someone like me who's come from a small town, yes, Taipei can be quite chaotic. Chaos is a noun. It just refers to when things are just kind of wild and untamed.
Kind of messy, disorderly, yeah. And now, in the novel, it says this contrast exists between the city of Newark. That's the urban life there, where Seymour grew up, and another place called Rimrock, and it's the country. It's a quieter environment where he raised his daughter. Now, contrast just means the state of being very different from something else. You can put two very different things together and contrast and compare, or compare and contrast. See where they're alike or similar or very different. And these two cities were really different. Newark, which is really urban, and then Rimrock, which is more like rural life. It's out in the country.
Rimrock. I've never heard of that. Yeah. Maybe it's fictitious.
I don't know.
And that's got a quiet environment, and he raised his daughter there. So if you raise your daughter or your children in the country, how could they possibly become corrupt and want to bomb a post office? Well, on another level, Seymour's life is also a pastoral. So we're talking about life in the country as being pastoral, but also about Seymour, the main character. His life is also kind of like living in the country in a great way.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So on the outside, he's got everything going for him. Remember his friend Nathan called him or said about his life that it was a charmed life. It was everything he could possibly want. Seemed to have all the lucky breaks. But that was on the outside. If you looked on the inside, his life was filled with turmoil and regret. Turmoil is a word that's similar to chaos, right? Mm-hmm. Turmoil is a noun. It just means in a lot of confusion, uncertainty. There's a lot of things that are disturbing you. And regret. If you regret something, you wish that you hadn't done some things in your past. I think a lot of people have some regrets about the past, although a very common saying is to live without any regret. Never regret what you did in the past. Just move forward. So that's the first paragraph here. Moving on to the next paragraph, it says the idea of an American pastoral also refers to the American dream. I think I mentioned that before we started the program.
You did?
Yeah. Huh, look at that.
The American dream. So that's the idea of the American pastoral. It also talks about the American dream, which, as you said, refers to basically starting with little or nothing and having a dream and pursuing it, going to university, working your way up, and eventually achieving your dream. And this is the idea that if you work hard in America, as we just said, you can achieve a happy life with a nice house, and a car in the garage, a loving family that doesn't have any problems, and lots of material things like a widescreen 4K TV or a couple of nice Mercedes-Benzes parked in your driveway.
A garage,
and
yeah.
Cable TV and, high-speed internet service, lots of time to travel to foreign countries. You've got a boat at the marina, and you've just got everything you could ever think of.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty nice life. Right now, guys, we're going to take a quick break, listen to our Chinese teacher, and then we'll be back to discuss this.
大家好，欢迎收听 English Digest， 我是 Alice。今天我们要阅读的文章是文学单元 Unit 16的第三天课程。在今天的文章中，我们将了解作者 Philip Roth 创作 American Pastoral 的背景，以及这本小说所要传达的讯息。首先，文章的第一段提到，小说将乡村的宁静生活和都市的喧嚣做对比。我们看到这一段的第三句 ，Pastorals are often used to compare the peacefulness of country scenery to the chaos of urban life。牧歌通常用来比较乡村风景的平静与都市生活的混乱。动词 compare。在本句是比较的意思，片语 compare A with or to B 就是比较 A 和 B。 例如 If you compare this novel with that one, you will find the former is much more interesting。 如果你比较这本小说和那本小说，你会发现前者有趣的多。此外 compare 也有比拟、比喻的意思， compare A to B就是把 A 比喻成 B。 要注意的是，这个时候介系词只能用 to 而不能用 with。 例如 Life is often compared to a journey， 人生常被比喻为一场旅程。另外 A can't compare with B 就是指 A 比不上 B。 例如 Lisa's work performance can't compare with mine， 丽莎的工作表现比不上我的。接下来我们看到第一段的第四句，这一句连用了两次关系副词 where。 我们看到这一句的前半部分， In the novel, this contrast exists between the city of Newark, where Seymour grew up。 原来的两句是 In the novel, this contrast exists between the city of Newark, Seymour grew up in Newark。 用冠带 which 合并后就变成In the novel, the contrast exists between the city of Newark, which Seymour grew up in. 这个时候可以将形容词子句的 in 移到冠带 which 前面。当先行词是地点的时候，介系词加 which 就等于关系副词 where。 我们再举一个例子。原来的两句是 Jack studies in this area. 杰克在这个地区就读。另一个句子是 There are many department stores in this area. 这个地区有许多百货公司。合并两句以后就会变成 Jack studies in this area where there are a lot of department stores. 杰克在有很多百货公司的地区就读。
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, everybody, let's continue with our lesson. Again, we were talking about...The idea of pastoral, okay, it's about the life of the main character in the novel, but it's also about the American dream. If you work hard, you can have a happy life, a nice family, kids who do what you tell them to, and lots of material things. Material just means things that you can actually get your hands on.
You can buy, yeah.
You can buy these things, and of course, we like to have lots of possessions, a great set of furniture, a nice car, computer equipment, expensive crystal decorations and stuff like that. Those are all material possessions.
Now, he was the son of immigrants, Seymour was, and he believes in this idea that if you work hard, you can achieve this happy life and have a nice house, nice family, lots of stuff.You know, we talk about material happiness because you have a lot of toys, and spiritual happiness or emotional happiness because you have a lot of love in your life. Well, he was the son of immigrants. An immigrant is someone who is born and raised in another country and then moves to live permanently outside their home country, in a foreign country.We've got a lot of immigrants in America that, you know, are born in other countries and then come to America. Are you an immigrant, Tom?
Not really.
Not really?
Not technically. You got to get citizenship or something to be an immigrant. I don't have that here in Taiwan, and I'm not really sure I'm going to stay here forever because of the political situation and all that. But in any case, he's the son of immigrants, and oftentimes there is kind of a difference between people who are immigrants and just regular folks there. But he even manages to make it a reality for a while. He believes in this idea. Seymour believes in the American dream. But in contrast, Mary, his daughter, has no faith in the American dream. Immigrants probably believe in it. They have a strong feeling that, yes, I have freedom now. I've escaped my country that is, always having wars and stuff. So now I'm here in some place where I can actually live my dream. But Mary's been there for a while, so she doesn't really understand that, I guess, or appreciate that. So she doesn't really think the American dream is such a great thing. And she is critical of the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. If you're critical, that means you're against something, you oppose it. And as you know, the Americans were in Vietnam. They had this involvement there, which means you are involved, you're there, and you're, you know, creating some influence there. You're part of the war and things like that. We talk about the U.S. involvement all over the world in various places. Some people welcome it, some people hate it.
That's right. Well, Mary, was really unhappy about the U.S. being involved or participating in the Vietnam War. Involvement, of course, is the noun form of the verb, to be involved. You need the be verb, be involved in something. You could also use participate. If you're involved, you're active. You're not just standing by and watching. You're getting in there and you're getting your hands dirty, as we often say.She didn't like the fact that the U.S. was in Vietnam fighting. She believes that the only way people can make the American dream come true is by using other people, especially the poor and the helpless. For example, she would look at people who maybe produce shoes, and she would say, yeah, but you're having your shoes made by very poor people. You're not paying them a good salary. So you're taking advantage of them. You're using them for your own wealth and your own success. So that was how she would criticize people who perhaps were actually seeing the American dream come true in their own lives.
Right, so if you make the American dream come true, somebody else has to sacrifice because you're taking advantage of those poor people by not giving them job opportunities.
Not paying them enough, yeah.
Or something like that. But in any case, that's open to debate. But in any case, let's move on now to the final paragraph. Another interesting aspect of the novel is its structure and conclusion. This is an aspect of the novel, a way to look at it, mm-hmm. a point of view of the novel. It's got this interesting structure, okay? And that's referring to how a novel is basically set up, what's in chapter one, what's in chapter two, blah, 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 all the way to the end. It's structure, and structure, of course, occurs not just in literature, but in film and music and all sorts of things.
When you talk about a chronological order, it means it goes in the order that time goes. So 1950 would follow 1940. So you go in the order of time. The book begins in the 1990s, but then it ends up in the 1973, the year of 1973. So you're going backwards. That's not chronological order. It often is true that in novels, they will skip around in time, you know, mm-hmm. just as a way to tell a story that's different. This was a significant year, something significant. Of course, it's important. Why was it important? It was the year the U.S. began withdrawing its troops from Vietnam. If you withdraw troops, it means you have soldiers in a particular area of the world and you have them return home. So they're no longer there. So they were in Vietnam and they asked the soldiers or they brought the soldiers home to the U.S.
Exactly. And, of course, Saigon fell in 1975 to the communists, and the rest is history. But in any case, that year was significant. It was important. It was meaningful. And by structuring the book this way, Roth reminds his readers that most of the story is occurring in Zuckerman's imagination. Just like the rest of us, I suppose, when we think back on our lives, we don't think of our lives in chronological order. We kind of jump around. One day I'm thinking about what happened in high school, and then I'm thinking about before I even went to kindergarten, and then I think about something that happened yesterday. I'm just jumping all over the place, and that's, I guess, because the story happens in his imagination. And yeah, you're going to be thinking like that if you're thinking back on your life.
Yeah, our minds can jump all over the place. We don't have to think in chronological order. I don't think I ever do, actually. Now, in this last couple of sentences, it says the book's abrupt ending is violent and filled with pain and uncertainty. We're not going to tell you why it's violent and filled with pain and uncertainty, but know that it is. If a book's ending is abrupt, it means it stops or ends very suddenly, kind of unexpectedly. You probably, if you're reading it, you probably wanted to turn the page and keep going, but that was it. It's over. Some movies are like that. Some TV shows are like that. And definitely some books are rather abrupt at the way they end. We also use the word abrupt to talk about someone who's talking to you, but their style of speech is kind of rude and very curt. They don't say too much. And we say, ooh, why are you being so abrupt with me?
Yeah, too direct, and sometimes this can cause some cultural conflicts between Westerners and Chinese people. You guys here like to be more subtle and get to the main point more slowly, whereas Westerners just kind of come to the point right away.
Cut to the chase, yeah.
And that might seem a little rude to folks here, whereas to us, you guys kind of seem kind of noncommittal or vague or something. Why don't you just get to the point? But in any case, that's that's a cultural difference, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it does have a rather abrupt, sudden ending.
Mm-hmm.
It's violent, which means people get beat up or killed and stuff like that. It's got lots of pain and uncertainty. Uncertainty means you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't want your life to have a lot of uncertainty. Lots of people like to be secure and go to the right college and know the right people, so everything is all set and there's nothing ambiguous. You want want things to be certain. You don't want to have uncertainty. That makes you go crazy.
Yeah, no one likes that feeling. It suggests that our lives will never be perfect, or we're not going to have the charmed life that Seymour seemed to have had at the beginning. Nope, our lives will never be perfect, and we'll encounter problems that perhaps we'll never be able to resolve or figure out. So that's how the book ends, though we're not going to say specifically what happens. You kind of get that idea. Right now, guys, it's time once again for our Chinese teacher.
文章的第二段提到小说也处理了 American Dream, 美国梦这个议题。我们看到这一段最后一句的前半部分。She is critical of the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. 她批评美国参与越战。这句有一个形容词 critical, 意思是批判的。片语 be critical of, 就是批评的意思。critical 还可以指关键的。例如我们可以说 something is of critical importance, 就是指某件事非常重要。例如 in the business world,Punctuality is of critical importance. 在商业界里，守时是非常重要的。另外 ,critical 还可以用来指危急的。片语 in a critical condition, 就是指情况很危急。例如 ,the patient is in a critical condition, and he may lose his life anytime. 这位病人的情况很危急，而且随时可能会失去生命。课文的最后一段提到小说中另一个有趣的地方是故事的架构和事件发生的顺序。我们看到这一段的倒数第三句 By structuring the book this way, Roth reminds his readers that most of the story is occurring in Zuckerman's imagination. 借由这样安排这本书，罗斯提醒读者大部分的故事都发生在祖克曼的想象中。本句有一个动词 remind, 意思是提醒，使什么想起。remind somebody of something, 就是指使某人想起某事物。例如 ,the beautiful scenery here reminds me of my childhood in the countryside. 这里的美丽风景使我想起我在乡村的童年。另外 ,remind 所接的受词后面也可以接 to 原 v, 或是 that 名词子句。表示提醒某人去做某事，或是提醒某人某事。例如 ,I will give David a call and remind him to bring his laptop. 我会打电话给大卫，并提醒他要带他的笔记型电脑。或是 ,My mom reminded me that I have an appointment with the dentist this afternoon. 我妈妈提醒我今天下午我和牙医有约。以上就是今天的课程，谢谢收听。
That's it for today. I hope you all enjoyed our explanation of our featured novel as much as you are going to enjoy reading the novel yourself. From all of us here in English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye. Bye.